following takes place between 1 p.m. and 2 p.m.
This is In the Net.
This is Brad.
In the Net with Brad Feldman.
What are you doing?
What are you doing?
Just watching.
Saved by Matt Reason, and he covers the rebound.
That is correct. That is correct.
What are you doing?
In the Net.
What are you doing?
Hey, Brad, who's that?
Taylor Twelman!
Hey, pick up the cordless.
What are you doing?
What are you doing?
In the Net. On the Net.
What are you doing?
What are you doing?
RevolutionSoccer.net.
All right, well, not exactly what you're looking for on week one. You can't say it was a bad performance by the Revs. The bottom line is they came home empty-handed from the windy, cold city. And, you know, you take heart from the fact that the new guys performed pretty well. End of the day, the Revs didn't take their chances, probably unlucky to go home having lost 1-0. They have the expansion guys, Toronto, coming up on Saturday. Toronto could have, I thought, gotten a result against Chivas. Early doors, they had a lot of chances, and Brad Guzan did very well to keep their shots out of the net. But you got to feel like the Revs head into Saturday looking to take the 3 points, no matter how many of their injured players they get back. The home opener against a new team, and you have to install them as heavy favorites. With me now, live in studio, Revolution first assistant coach Paul Mariner. Coach, welcome back for 2007.
Thank you, Brad. It's great to be back.
I just said it. You know, the Revs had their chances to get at least something out of the game, and couldn't put a goal away.
Yeah, the first 15 minutes we were at our best. Stevie and I turned to each other and said, I suppose it's to be expected. We had so many people making the debut, quality players, we feel. But when you go into the real life first game of the season, it takes a little bit of time for the senior players to trust the new guys and. The new guys are sort of looking around thinking, what's this all about? And really, there's nothing that startled them, I don't think. I think that once we got that 15 minutes out of the way, we looked pretty comfortable. The stats sort of bear that out. We did feel bitterly disappointed that we didn't get anything out of the game. Keeper did well. He always seems to do well against us. And we looked pretty solid all over the field, but we didn't get anything. That really hurt us.
Walk me through your evaluation of the performance of the new guys. Gary Flood was somewhat faulted on the goal, but I don't know how much else he could do. You also heard a little criticism of Wells Thompson, showing diving in on a Justin Mapp dribble run. But other than those two moments, I can't remember those guys really doing much wrong.
Well, the first goal sort of came from Matt was given a free roll off the front two, and he sort of changed positions a wee bit with Paws, found himself out wide, and Gary was completely isolated with him. Now, Matt, going against anybody, is a pretty decent player. Gary obviously didn't know his strengths, always liked to go to his left foot. It was just one of those things. I thought that to come in and try and fill the shoes of Shell Ree is not very easy. And I thought that he passed the ball very, very well. He looked assured, took up some very good positions. I think all three of the guys who made the debut should be proud of themselves. I really do. I think the boys are quick learners. They're very, very smart. I spoke to Adam after the game. He just felt that he was a little off balance when he was receiving it. So it's a learning curve, and for these guys, it's going to have to be a fast learning curve. He felt that Brown and Curtin and Sigaris were bumping him when he was going to receive the ball. Well,
that's life in the big leagues, right?
Well, it's life in the big leagues, yeah, and you've got to try and get that separation. That's why we're working it so much in practice. When it comes into the big game, it becomes second nature to them. So it's getting the midfield players in sync with the front players and so on. I thought Taylor and Adam linked up very, very well. And I think that Wells, for a debut playing in a five isolated out there on the on the left-hand side, I thought he did very, very well. You know, dove in a couple of times. Hey, we've all done it in our debuts. So we're very pleased with the unit. We thought they were great.
Who for you on the Revs stood out as having a good night? I thought Andy Dorman, after after he settled in, did everything but score.
Yeah, it's we sort of said at halftime, you know, who's the more comfortable of the two coaching staffs? Because we didn't get off to a great start, but after that, Andy Dorman was making inroads into their back three for fun. He had 7 shots on the night. Maybe would have liked to have done better with some of those shots. But he's very difficult to mark, as everybody in the league knows what he's going to do, but it's how do you counteract that? And they didn't do a particularly good job of doing that. I thought James Riley had a fantastic game.
Yes.
I think that, you know, again, coming into the heart of a three is not the easiest position. Michael Parkhurst makes it look as though it's like, you know, sitting in an armchair watching the game, playing the game. Jimmy had some conversations with Steve when we were down in New Orleans, just adjusted a couple of little points that we wanted him to work on. He's worked on them, he's took it on board, and I thought he was terrific. I mean, the thing about the Revs team is that we don't really have that many, you know, standout players. We have a lot of consistency in our group. I think that the unit, the back three, had a very good evening. I can't really criticise the midfield five. We thought they were very good. And again, a couple of adjustments at half-time with Taylor and Adam, and I thought they were a dangerous partnership. So we're not unhappy with the way that we played. Obviously, we're unhappy with the result, but we feel that we're on the right track.
Yeah, I think what I came away from the game saying is that, you know, you drop a Fitz Shawry or Conno Smith, if you had the Revs' first choice selection or even close to it up against that Chicago 11 at their place, you'd have to fancy the Revolution's chances over the course of a season.
If I'm looking outside, trying to look in on the game, it seemed to me that Chicago had somewhat of the first string out there. You know, debatable about whether Robinson would play at the back. I think he's a fine young player. Other than that, you know, selection with Thiago, whether he plays up front or Barrett and Rolfe, well, you know, well, that's up to the manager. But we feel that, we're in pretty decent shape at this stage of the season, having already dropped the season opener away from home, something that we didn't want to do. We feel pretty comfortable about the squad.
And looking around the league, it's hard to say that any team, other than maybe Colorado, had an outstanding performance in week one, which is what you see whether it's the English Premiership or in Spain. Most teams don't hit the ground running in week one in a season that spreads out over the course of seven months plus. Certainly DC United, who is installed by a lot of pundits as favorites in this conference, certainly didn't look like world beaters out in Denver.
No, I mean, I would imagine every single coaching staff that is working in the MLS, they obviously prepare their team the way they like to prepare. Some teams have had, 16-game preseason games. We try to take a little slower way of going about it. It's a long season, lots of travel for the players. It's very important that they rest. We'd like to have good habits within the club. Until the first game comes around, you really don't know, A, what your fitness is like, what your patterns are going to be like, what your shape of your team's going to be like. You have an idea, but until the whistle, the big whistle for the start of the season kicks us off, we're not quite sure. We have a bit of a good idea. But it seems as though parity is ruling at the present moment. Within the league, Colorado, new stadium, full house, you know, DC coming to town. Yeah, they probably did pretty well. I'm not looking too much into these first games, to be honest.
Looking to the second game, an unknown quantity in Toronto FC. From what I saw of the Chivas game, and I didn't see the whole thing, they made an effort to sort of dictate the tempo early and pin Chivas back. The keeper came up with some big saves on Escandarian, among others. Buttle and Escandarian up top. Carl Robinson looks like a good player, sort of unknowns. in the back line. You expected to see Adam Brass, the Canada international. Instead, Lawson Vaughn comes into the back four. You know, you have Jimmy Brennan, some named players, but not world beaters. Still, to me, looking at Toronto, week one, year one, they're ahead of where the most recent two expansion teams before them were, RSL and Chivas USA 2 years ago.
Well, I think a team usually reflects the coach. You know, Mo Johnson, Stevie Nichol, myself, we'll go back a long way. We know each other inside out. We know what sort of a team that Mo wants to put together. It's a very difficult task for him. I think he's done an excellent job trying to get players in. You can see the type of players he's trying to pull in, hard-working. Not journeymen. I want to be disparaging about those players, but they're players that are going to go out on the field. They're going to work hard. You know exactly what you're going to get for 90 minutes. You know exactly what you're going to get for 30-odd games. And I think that's very important for a first year franchise. I think it's important that they get off to a solid start. Chivas are a good team. They will give teams some problems this year. So it's a difficult road trip for them, long road trip. As you say, I think they equip themselves pretty well. And we're certainly not looking past this game. Absolutely not. That's not the way we go about it. This is going to be a very difficult game for us.
How's the squad look? It looked like Noonan had some, was pretty sharp, all things considered. You know, just a little over 2 weeks off of surgery, but maybe not 100% fit. And what about Smith and Joseph? Any update?
With the injuries that the players have got, this weather is not being too kind to the rehab. It's muscle injuries. Pat started pre-season, was doing great in pre-season, then he sort of broke down, had the surgery. The lady in Germany does a remarkable job getting the players back so quickly. But we're not rushing any of those players back. I think, and that's credit to what we've brought in this season. We're happy what we've brought in. Would we like to see all those players on the field? Of course we would. Will you see some of those players this weekend? There's a chance. But if it's going to be a really cold, sort of freezing night, it may not be the best time to come back with muscle injuries, because it takes an age to warm up. You've got to keep them warm. So I'm not trying to be shady on this. It's just the fact that we're a little cautious, and it's early in the season, and we're going real light with the players.
Makes sense to me. All right, Coach. Well, we appreciate you stopping by, as always, and good luck going forward.
Thanks, Brad.
Revolution coach Paul Mariner. Don't go anywhere, folks. Good guests coming up. Ridge Mahoney of Soccer America later in the program. We may get a word from north of the border in advance of the Toronto game. But on the other side of this break, Greg Lawless, as we continue on In the Net.
International superstar and soccer icon David Beckham is the newest member of Major League Soccer and will bring his world-class skills to Foxborough August 12th against your New England Revolution at Gillette Stadium. Get your tickets to this must-see event as part of the David Beckham 4-Pack. The 4-Pack includes the Revs home opener doubleheader on April 14th against Toronto FC and the U.S. Women's National Team FIFA World Cup tune-up against Mexico. Freddie Adu and his new team Real Salt Lake on June 2nd, a nationally televised match against the Kansas City Wizards, and the first ever visit of David Beckham to Gillette Stadium with the LA Galaxy on August 12th. The Revs 4-Pack featuring David Beckham. 4 dates, 5 games for just $72. With free parking makes New England Revolution Soccer a fun and affordable day for the whole family. Call the Revolution Ticket Office at 1-877-GET-REVS to get your David Beckham ticks. Get your kicks and get the Revolution.
I'm in a dryer, trapped in the lint vent.
Right now, there are millions of coins out there that have been forgotten. Coins with real value.
I'm next to a French fry under the passenger seat.
Bank of America is doing something to end this senseless epidemic. It's called Keep the Change. Once you enroll, every purchase you make with your Bank of America Visa check card is rounded up to the next dollar, and the difference is transferred from your checking account to your savings.
I'm in an empty mayonnaise jar in the garage.
So the next time you spend $10.20 at the grocery store, you'll be doing your part to put 80 cents into your savings account. Please, give this change the opportunity to really add up.
I've been sitting on a record player needle since 1982.
Bank of America. Bank of Opportunity. Open a checking account and enroll in Keep the Change today.
Member FDIC, patent pending.
Oh, now a shot! Unbelievable! 3-2, Taylor Twellman!
Wear what the pros wear, exclusively from the Revolution Pro Shop. Conveniently located at Gillette Stadium, it's the perfect place to get all of your official New England Revolution apparel. The Revolution Pro Shop features apparel made by Adidas, the official apparel provider of the MLS. Everything from jerseys and sweatshirts to hats and jackets. Give your jersey a kick by having the Pro Shop customize it with the name and number of your favorite player, or the name and number of your choice. With a huge selection of Revolution items for men, women, kids, and infants, the Revolution Pro Shop has something for everyone. The Revolution Pro Shop at Gillette Stadium is open to the public from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Saturday. Can't get to the stadium? The Revolution Online Pro Shop is open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at revolutionsoccer.net. Get the gear your favorite player or coach wears on the field at the Revolution Pro Shop. If you were any closer, you'd be in the locker room.
As we continue on In the Net, we got to do something about these tunes, man. These tunes don't reflect my vibe. It's just not my vibe. Who is this? Social D or something like that? Yeah, all right. Social Distortion's all right. I'm not feeling the flows. But not a bad weekend from a results perspective, other than the Revs result. In their game, Colorado dumping D.C. 2-1 in the nationally televised match. Eric Wynalda sitting that one out after his little Jim Rome episode. Interested to know what people think of Julie Foudy as an analyst. I thought the show looked good. I still think that, for me, I think that I don't like when they do the low cutaways when it's not on the ball in play. I'm all for getting up in people's faces, showing the players hero shots and everything, but show me the ball in play. And I thought that the Revolution production team did a good job at Chicago using an unfamiliar crew, because that's the way it works. The Revolution bringing their own producer and director, but then they have they hire locally, and that's the way it's done everywhere. So great job by the Revolution production team, and I thought that the for a first show, the pictures look great. It's also great in Chicago when you've got the Ultras and the Barnburners and Section 8 and all those cats singing down there at the end. And that atmosphere carries the game a little bit, even when you hit lulls in the action. I know as a commentator, you can afford to be a little sparser with your words when you've got the singing going the whole time and an energetic crowd. So. I thought that was good. I didn't get to see the Red Bulls Columbus Crew game. I know that Shep Messing was critical of the Columbus fans for not showing up. I wasn't quite sure what Frank Galappa was on about with the disappointing crowds around the league. Chivas has gotten their numbers up. Sellout in Denver. I don't know what. Yeah, they had like 18,000, 19,000 in Salt Lake City. So. What are you on about, Frank? It's not 1996 where they're selling, 48,000 tickets, but let's be real here. Overall, a good first weekend. No barn burner games. I didn't see the four-goal game in Salt Lake City, but I'm going to take a look at that going forward. But here to give us the national perspective, the league-wide perspective, Soccer America senior editor Ridge Mahoney. Ridge, welcome back for 07.
Thank you, Brad. Happy New Year to you, too.
Yeah. I've seen you.
Happy new season,
yeah,
I should say.
Happy new season. Well, it is a happy new season. There's as much buzz around the league going in as we've had in some time. The Beckham signing, obviously, is a big deal. And then the EKG spiked a little bit with the signing of Cotemoc Blanco last week. Without going too deep into the Beckham thing, which I think we're all almost sick of talking about at this point, what do you make of the Blanco signing?
It was interesting because I had a feeling that if Chicago had been a lot better at the gate, they may have not been so anxious to hire Blanco. And we have to remember that Chicago had a lot of home games backloaded into the end of the schedule. Kind of the reverse of what's going to happen with the Galaxy this year. So I think it was hard for them to get a real fix on how they would do if they were home every 2 weeks as opposed to playing like eight games, you know, in 13 weeks or whatever.
Right.
But I think, you know, and if, in Blanco's, you know, history of barking at referees and being difficult to handle as well is well known, but I think they thought it was worth the gamble. Although he's not the kind of player they really need. He's a goal scorer, yes, but he's more of an attacking, creating kind of player, and they have several of those guys already. So it's really, I'm kind of mixed about how it's going to do and why it was done. And the other thing is, if they did guarantee him a 3-year contract, I thought that was too much, but I hear that they didn't. So there are a lot of factors in there. I think it's curious. I'll be fascinated to see how it turns out.
Well, it'll certainly help attendances, you know, in opposing team cities where people will come to cheer him or jeer him. He's a lightning rod figure. Greg Lawless and I disagreed on the air openly. I think Blanco will probably give you a couple of highlight reel goals and some tricky moves. I think it's going to be I don't think he's going to rack up the goals. Lawless disagrees. He doesn't love it as a marketing move, but he thinks he's going to succeed on the field. So, yeah.
Yeah, I could say he's 34, and there haven't too many 34-year-old goal scorers, regardless of their pedigree. Remember, Hermosillo was a little younger when he came, and his scoring record was okay. Hernandez was kind of the same kind of player, although much different temperamentally than Blanco. He scored goals, he set them up, he did all right with the stats, and he was a few years younger. We'll just have to see.
Yeah, I also think that, you know, and I don't want to open the whole debate as to whether MLS is better as a league than it was 6-7 years ago. I think one thing that you can't, you know, if you just look at the goals per game, teams are more organized. The coaches who have lasted in the league or have gotten hired again are coaches who know how to keep things tight. I think that MLS and American defenders are more sophisticated than they were in the early years of the league, and it's, you know, it's been written about ever since the signing happened. It's people aren't going to stand off of Blanco because they watched him on TV when he was a kid in this country. Guys are going to try to kick him.
Well, there's no question about that, but I also think that it's up to the league to make sure that those players are, quote, protected, unquote. And I think that what you said, though, I think the league certainly wants the bump at the gate, but I think they also realize that the basic American player and the basic American MLS team is more organized, better defensively, and you're going to need these game-breaker kind of players to keep the league from stagnating. So the timing might be right, and I don't think it might be right perfectly for a Blanco or another player if he comes at 34 and 35, but right now that's the best we can do.
Sure. No, I think that sums it up. I concur with that approach. Let's talk about some of the other, you know, topical things. I think you have to say it's a successful open, the weather notwithstanding, at Dick's Sporting Goods Park, the Rapids opening their new building with a win over one of the best teams in the league, and a pretty good show for national TV.
Yeah, I would have to say so. You've liked D.C. not to get kind of knocked off their socks early, but Colorado had never won an opening game, and that was one of the things that back in January and February, you know, Fernando Clavijo was preaching to his players, is that you don't want to put all your eggs in one basket in just one game, but we've never won a home game. We have a new stadium. We got the defending, not the defending champion, probably the best team in the history of the league. Let's get out there and give them a good effort. And D.C. wasn't ready for it, or the weather. So all credit to Colorado. Now they only have 29 more games to prove that that facility will make a difference.
Did you get a chance to see the scintillating 0-0 draw between the Red Bulls and the Crew?
Only the highlights. I'm not surprised. I think both of those teams are going to struggle. Unfortunately, it could be an interesting three-team race to stay out of the bottom between them and Toronto. Although I think Toronto showed a few flashes, but they're not very organized, and we still don't know if those Canadian players are really going to stand up to the test of MLS. And that's no slight against Canada. A lot of players from a lot of countries have struggled in MLS.
It's funny, in these parts, a lot of people predicted Toronto to be a playoff team, myself included.
Well, having taken a look at them, I would not put any money on that, but that doesn't mean that they don't have a chance to gel and come together. You know, it was the first game for a lot of guys in MLS, so it's very difficult to make any assumptions. But, you know, the team that I think, you know, will get back into the playoff chase and might knock out those three teams we're just talking about is Kansas City. You know, they've been very close because they've got, I think they have a very good lineup, and I just think they've underachieved under Bob Ganser. They were a championship, reached the championship, you know, 3 years ago, and I don't think they've lost a lot from there.
Josh Wolf, where are the goals going to come from there? Unless Eddie Johnson drinks some magic Kool-Aid.
Well, you know, Seeley had 10 last year. He could equalize that, and I don't think Davey Arnaud is going to be down at 4 again.
Okay. No, I know that's interesting. Yeah, you could be right. it may be the shot in the arm they need. I don't think they're a bad side. And Sealy certainly has pace and power and you know, can find the net. But I don't know. I don't rate Kansas City going in. Again, I haven't seen them. They were the one team that didn't play this week. I haven't seen the whole Toronto game. I just saw, you know, parts of the first half when they were unlucky. Well, I wouldn't say unlucky. Brad Guzan did well to keep them from scoring a couple
right.
times. And if they had gotten that early goal, the whole game would have changed. I didn't think Chivas looked dominant by any stretch.
No, but I was there, and I thought that Chivas was knocking the ball around good, and their questions are going to be in the back. You know, Suarez is not the youngest guy in the field, and they have a little bit of, they're still a little bit disjointed. And I don't know if that's just the fact that it's the first game of the season. They're under a new head coach, Preki, who's got no experience taking over from a very good head coach, Bob Bradley.
Yep.
Maybe they'll sort that out, maybe not. But I thought that Chivas was the better team. But defensively, you know, Brad Guzan cannot make, you know, three or four great saves every game. They're going to have to sort that out. No
right.
question.
And again, you saw the whole game. I had one eye on it for about half the game. So, you know, we'll have to do our homework here before Toronto shows up. I don't know about Toronto. I think they do have questions at the back, and I agree that the Canadians, you know, pose some questions. I think once they get Ronnie O'Brien back, they're going to be a more,
right.
much more dynamic team.
And I think they expect a little bit more from Andy Welsh, but you know, he's really young. He didn't look like he was into the flow at all. So the other guy, Carl Robinson, looks like, though, he's going to be an effective player.
Yeah, that's a good signing, the Wales international. Do you think that Buttle and Eskandarian will be the goods?
Well, that's the question, is that they've got maybe, you know, 1.5 forwards amongst three players. I don't think Aleko looked very good. I don't, unfortunately, I think maybe 6 or 7 goals like Aleko had last year is going to be his top, which is okay if the other guys are going to hit that many. You know, Buttle's been very inconsistent, even though his numbers have been pretty good. And, you know, Connor Casey came in. He's been injured again. He's played very little over the last 2 years because of injuries, and he's not all the way back yet. So there's a big question mark in each one of those three forwards for Toronto. So if they answer two of those questions well, they'll be in the playoffs. But if only one guy can score goals, they don't have a chance.
One of the things we always like doing when you have you on, Ridge, is get your, you know, sort of outsider's view of not that you're an outsider, but the sort of the California view on the Revolution. You know, I'm so close to it sometimes, it's good for me to hear your perspective in the context of somebody who watches the whole league. You know, I think, you know, it's pretty clear that, you know, the Revs have stood pat other than the draft choices they've made. You know, where do you see them fitting into the Eastern Conference picture?
Well, you know, we kind of went through the rest of the East, which is, you know, frankly, not very strong. And so that's why I think New England has a very good chance to finish in the top two once again. And depending on how badly D.C. gets banged up in Super League and all the other games they're playing, you know, they could contend for the title. I liked what I saw of Andy Dorman. I mean, we know he has his shortcomings, but without Clint Dempsey, he and Noonan and Twellman and Ralston are going to have to propel the offense, and it's going to be up to the rest of the guys to do the business, you know, in all parts of the field. And I'd have to say that, yes, you can say standing pat is bad, but they did get to the final, which is the same thing you could say about Houston, which also pretty much stood pat. And D.C. is probably the class of the league if all these guys perform, and everybody, you know, there's 3 or 4 other teams, and I put the Revs right in there, that could be right behind them.
Yeah, you could say D.C. is the class of the league, but I think it's interesting for me, you know, even in, when they were playing against, you know, continental or, you know, Mexican competition in Chivas Guadalajara, you could see that Luciano Emilio, Christian Gomez, and Jaime Moreno, when the three of them were playing their triangles, they were playing a different game than anybody else out on the field. Like, that is a very, very dangerous, you know, attacking trident. And you've got guys in support like Joshua Gross and Ben Olsen. But then there is, just like with every other MLS team, a certain amount of a drop-off there, Ridge. Like Steven Derue, Justin Moose, you know, even Clyde Sims for me looked, you know, like a really weak link for them. So over the course of a season, like you say, where they're going to have fixture
right.
congestion, you know, D.C., you know, they're not thick top to bottom. And I think the Revolution, one thing for me, again, this is me looking at them through the preseason, they have more depth with their young players than they've ever had in the 12-year history of the team, you know, with guys like Wells Thompson and Ryan Solly and even Adam Crisman, who didn't have a great debut, but I think is going to score some goals.
No, I agree. And it's just a question, is Fred a significant upgrade on Freddie? And then, like you say, if he can't go and they've got a couple short, they're a couple short up top, who steps in for him? I have to agree that probably 1-18, you know, the Revolution probably is slightly better. And so it'll come down to a question of health and how well Tom Soane manages those resources. And the other thing is, you have to remember, they've both got a very important role for a three-man back line. It's Boswell in D.C. It's Parkhurst for New England. If those two guys perform, they solve a lot of the problems because they're good organizers, they rescue tricky situations in the back, and they find the open man when the ball is won. If those two guys play well, those two teams are going to be at the top of the East, no question.
Question by email for you, Ridge. Dave Cantor, a regular listener, asks, a few years ago, Soccer America changed from a biweekly newspaper-style publication to glossy monthly that concentrates on features. Please comment on that change. Does Soccer America consider that a success? Any chance of it returning to being biweekly? And are there any other changes in store for Soccer America?
Well, the changes were driven strictly by the Internet because we used to be a weekly. We used to be the news source for fans around the country. There were very few other places for people to get their daily fix of information, or weekly, as the case may be. Well, with the Internet, that advantage has been taken away. So we've gone to more of an analytical, comprehensive, feature-ish oriented, like the reader said. And we also do daily emails and have a decent website. So we're kind of trying to do both. We're trying to be a feature-oriented, analysis-oriented theme issue every month, and then the daily updates you get with the emails blasted right into your mailbox, which a lot of people seem to like. So we found this formula. We're going to work on it, and we think it's going to do well.
Well, I'm a big fan of the emails, including your MLS Confidential and also the Soccer America Daily. If you follow college soccer, the college soccer newsletter that goes out into your email every day. And Dave, if you're a subscriber, I suggest that you get on their website and put in for those emails because a lot of people swear by them, and you get scoops coming out of there that nobody else does. So I'm not trying to plug Soccer America, but for me, the best thing about it is the email letters. And I like the glossy magazine, although whatever happens on every road trip is one of the players takes it out of the magazine pocket in front of me while I'm asleep and I never see it again. So.
Well, that just means you should get one for your wife and one for your daughter, so you've got plenty around the house just in case.
Yeah, there you go. We've always supported Soccer America in the Feldman household. So, Ridge, what's your take on some of the things that have gone on in the offseason? The game first, the partnership with the Bundesliga. Again, I'm leaving the Beckham thing alone, and also the TV contracts and the revenue that brings in.
Well, the TV contracts are really important, and not just for the revenue, of course. You know, to get $20 million approximately a year from HDNet, Fox Soccer Channel, Univision, and ESPN2 is much better than paying. But when you get television companies really investing in your product, they promote it. They cross-promote the other programming. They put emphasis on their own kind of platforms to spread it across all their platforms. So you get a lot of MLS content, no matter if you want it on an iPod or you want it, you know, on a website or whatever. And they make a commitment. Now, you might not like everything that they do, but when an ESPN2 and a Univision brings their muscle into driving MLS product, the result is going to be that more people are going to be aware of it and they'll pay more attention to it, just because it's like the 800-pound gorilla. You know, you look at the 800-pound gorilla, well, what he got on his shoulders? Well, you pay attention because it's an 800-pound gorilla, and that hasn't happened in the past. And I think that television driving force is going to be very important for them, and the revenues, you know, certainly are too. Some of the other things, the Game First Initiative, we'll see how they work out. The refereeing thing is kind of interesting, although that's been the U.S. Soccer to have four full-time referees. That's good because they'll always be playing MLS games, and they'll get to know the players and the teams, and, you know, get to know the tricks that the players try to play on referees all the time. But the problem is, I don't know if they're going to have the same pressure to perform, because fewer referees doing games is good, but it'd also be bad if some of the referees are not doing well because they can't be replaced, or they would be less tended to be replaced. So I think that's kind of a wash. Anytime you make a partnership like with Arsenal or the Real Madrid or the Bundesliga, it's definitely a plus because it gets you into the awareness of people who have been doing soccer for decades, if not more than a century, and that's always positive.
All right, Ridge, there it is, MLS 2007 in a nutshell. Appreciate the time and the informed commentary. Hope to check back with you as the season progresses.
As you know, anytime.
Ridge Mahoney of Soccer America, thanks very much, and we'll talk to you soon.
Well, coming up, we still have my partner Greg Lawless, so stick around. And by the way, MLS wasn't paying to have the games on TV for some time now. There's a misperception that the Revolution were doing that as well. It's been a long time since they're actually buying their way onto ESPN2 at the league level. It was just rolled into the into the World Cup rights contract for 2002 and 2006. So it's leveraged. You know, I guess you could say that's a way of buying your way on the air. But no question the fact that ESPN has invested millions of dollars into the rights means they have a vested interest in making it work, and that's good for the league and good for the sport. More on the other side of this break.
International superstar and soccer icon David Beckham is the newest member of Major League Soccer and will bring his world-class skills to Foxborough August 12th against your New England Revolution at Gillette Stadium. Get your tickets to this must-see event as part of the David Beckham 4-Pack. The 4-Pack includes the Reds home opener doubleheader on April 14th against Toronto FC and the U.S. Women's National Team FIFA World Cup tune-up against Mexico. Freddie Adu and his new team Real Salt Lake on June 2nd, a nationally televised match against the Kansas City Wizards, and the first ever visit of David Beckham to Gillette Stadium with the LA Galaxy on August 12th. The Revs 4-Pack featuring David Beckham. 4 dates, 5 games for just $72 with free parking makes New England Revolution Soccer a fun and affordable day for the whole family. Call the Revolution Ticket Office at 1-877-GET-REVS to get your David Beckham ticks. Get your kicks and get the Revolution.
I'm in a dryer, trapped in the lint vent.
Right now, there are millions of coins out there that have been forgotten. Coins with real value.
I'm next to a French fry under the passenger seat.
Bank of America is doing something to end this senseless epidemic. It's called Keep the Change. Once you enroll, every purchase you make with your Bank of America Visa check card is rounded up to the next dollar. And the difference is transferred from your checking account to your savings.
I'm in an empty mayonnaise jar in the garage.
So the next time you spend $10.20 at the grocery store, you'll be doing your part to put 80 cents into your savings account. Please, give this change the opportunity to really add up.
I've been sitting on a record player needle since 1982.
Bank of America. Bank of Opportunity. Open a checking account and enroll in Keep the Change today.
Member FDIC, patent pending.
Baby, you're a rich man too. Well, maybe not rich in the wallet, but certainly rich in ideas and opinion anyway. My broadcast partner, Greg Lawless.
Just a nice little touch across the box.
Is being fined by the FCC for that comment, and he joins us now to answer the charges that was an obscene comment that you used there. That's in the open of every Revs radio game. What are you on about?
What are you talking about?
Did you hear that?
No, I didn't hear that. It went so fast. There was so much noise because everyone was cheering about it. I didn't even hear what I said.
Just a nice little touch across the box.
You can't say it on the radio, man.
Oh, I most certainly can say it on the radio.
Oh, God.
Innuendo and double entendre? Isn't that part of radio lore?
What did you just say? I don't understand those words. I got my intellectual friend here. Yeah. Double entendre? I don't know.
Exactly.
You know I don't speak Spanish. In English, please.
Good stuff, Dr. Dvorkin on the boards today. Your thoughts on a frigid trip to Chicago?
Well, considering the injury problems that plagued the Revolution going to this game, I'd actually say it was quite a success. Even if they lost, I mean, I think they can take a lot out of that game. After about the 20th minute, I'd say the Revs dominated the game.
Yep.
They certainly had more of the chances. If Taylor Twellman finishes that header, it's a 1-1 game, and I think it would probably end up that way, but the Revs come out with a win. Because the second half, I think the defense looked pretty solid. And everyone else, you know, Christman sort of got it together and started holding the ball, which helped everybody else getting out of the defense.
Mm-hmm.
And Dorman started to push through the middle and actually had some nice runs by Jay Heaps coming down the right flank. So
yeah, that's why I was kidding him in the airport about being an overlapping right back in a back three. He's like, well,
I know.
He's like, you're not supposed to do that. I was like, yeah, but when they give you 20 yards to advance, why not?
Exactly, man? Exactly. And, you know, the first 20 minutes, it was the Revs that were giving 20 yards to advance. And then they you know, tightened up a little bit, and they went from there.
To be fair, you know, Justin Mapp is one of the most incisive, you know, sort of attacking players. It wasn't as if they were just sort of giving him the space. He was making the space.
Well, of course he was making the space, but you know, once that space is made, right, the Revs gave it. You know, even when he had the ball on the goal, I think he had too much space out on the flank, and, you know, he needs to be closed down a little bit there. But, you know, in the first 20 minutes, there was also C.J. Brown was coming up into space. He was finding a lot of space out on the right flank. There was just space on the flanks. And part of that is just, you know, I think first game jitters. Part of it was that you had some youth in the center of the midfield where you need a lot of organizational skills. And you need someone to step up, you know, basically a Shaori Joseph to step up and say, okay, now you go pressure, I'll sit back. You go pressure, I'll sit back.
Yeah, and I agree. I think the first 15, 20 minutes that was not the case.
Right.
Gary Flood then sort of figured it out, and he stopped, you know, he was putting out the fires before they started a little bit more, if you'll excuse the terrible, obvious pun.
Yeah, I think Laurentiwicz did a good job.
He had a good game. I couldn't believe I got on the chat boards and people were criticizing Laurentiwicz. I thought he did really well. I thought Steve Ralston had a pretty good game, looked pretty spry.
Definitely looked good in the first half, especially. He was getting down the right flank pretty well, whipped in a couple of good balls. So,
and you know, you just in your most recent column for SportsIllustrated.com, you said that the Reds will be dangerous, but who will feed Taylor Twellman the ball? And I think that question was at least initially answered to an extent by Ralston, and then to a greater degree by Andy Dorman.
I think Andy Dorman especially, but Andy's in the middle, so you know you're playing the. If he can continue to float out into that wing, those wings, I think you will definitely find, you know, Twelmo and whoever else is up top with him will start to get a lot of good balls in. Because if Andy can continue to sort of pick and choose those right moments to slide out of the middle into the space, you know, they're going to be great. Then again, they were playing against another 3-5-2. So when it becomes a 4-4-2 that they go up against, Andy's going to have to know when to go up to the middle. He's going to have to find his space in the middle.
Well, we know he can do that. What he does then is he sort of times his run late and uses the center channel. You know, we had Mariner on earlier. Paul Mariner was saying, you know, everybody knows what he's going to do at this point, but people still, you know, working out how you track that run is still something that people, you know, don't always find so easy. Interesting to see how much tracking Chris Rolfe had to do for the fires the game wore on.
Yeah, was Rolfe even in the game?
Early doors, he got the ball a lot, and then he kind of disappeared.
Yeah, I didn't see anything. So, and he's a good player, but oh well.
Isn't it funny how some players, you know, do great against the Revolution, and some guy like Rolfe has never hurt the Revs. But you imagine the joy in Foxborough when they saw that Nate Jaqua was going to the other conference. Jaqua had, you know, I feel like he has 3/4 of his career goals against New England.
I know, and you know, but then again, Rolfe is a pain in the ass for Chelsea, so.
If you had to choose, I guess, but it hasn't gotten, you know, when it gets him a job with Reading or something, then it will pay off. Again, I'm looking at your column on SI.com, and everybody should check in. It's sort of an irregular column. Sometimes you write 3 times a month, and sometimes it's just, you know, every other month.
It's usually every other Monday, but sometimes it does get put off now and then when SI calls me and says, can you do this or do that instead? So
I gotcha. Well, the most recent one, I love this line because it says everything. You know, most people think that the Mexican icon, referring to Cuauhtemoc Blanco, is going to be a bust. In other words, he's no Beckham. But since I think most people are usually wrong, let's get that again. Greg Lawless says, I think most people are usually wrong. So he's saying that Blanco explodes. So that you're basically admitting that you're just being a contrarian as usual. You're not basing it on any...
I'm not a contrarian. What are you talking about?
What are you basing that? Well, in this case, he may well be. The devil that Blanco can be is, I think, an enticing proposition, which is why I say it's a great marketing move, but not necessarily a great soccer move. Why do you think he's going to score a lot of goals? I think he'll score a couple of great goals, but consistently he's going to score in this league?
Yeah, I think he is. I think because he's the kind of player who tends to succeed in this league. the type of foreign player in terms of skills and skill set that tends to succeed. He's not a guy that is based on speed and his physical play, right? He's more based on his, sort of craftiness and creativity. And it seems like the foreign guys that come in are those types of players. All the guys who come in who, let's say, are 32 or 33, where they've spent their career sort of being blessed with, you know, Ronaldo-like. Let's take example for Ronaldo. I don't think Ronaldo, would be as effective in MLS as he has been through his entire career. Not that I would reject Ronaldo coming in MLS, but there's something to be said for the kind of player who bases whose success is based on talent and sort of skills versus the kind whose success has been based on physical abilities and physicality. And I think that Blanco has the kind of skills, the kind of goal scoring, take a player on and then get rid of the ball kind of thing. Those are the kind of skills that will lead to success.
See, I agree with you, but I don't think that as a goal scorer that's necessarily been the case. I think if you're talking about somebody like a Christian Gomez or Yuri Djorkaeff who can sit in behind the forwards and sort of slice and dice a little bit, where he's not counted on for the finish, but I don't know. Listen, Blanco at his best is better than Jose Manuel Abundis. But Abundis... But Abundis scored a lot of goals for the Mexico national team, and 5-6 years ago was just as big a name player as Blanco was down there.
Okay.
But
not anymore.
No, but he's the same age, and Blanco's not tearing it up down there. Like, he has 4 goals, but he's like, I don't know. I'm just going on what I've seen. I think the physicality is going to be an issue because he's playing against the back line where the most physical players in MLS are. So anyway, I don't want to spend all. You guys not here all of July, so let's drop that for now. What do you think of Toronto? Did you get to see any of that game?
I haven't seen the game. I have it on tape. I'm going to watch it. So I really can't speak too much about it. From what I read, they had a couple of good chances early on. Electrolex seemed to have had a pretty good game, but they weren't able to come through. And I guess Brad Guzan for Chivas USA
had to make
a couple of big saves. Which would keep it in. So if that's the case against the Revs, I'll take Matt Reese over at Guzan even any day. So
yeah, the Guzan's improving though. He doesn't look like a kid out there anymore. He has a bearing of a veteran, and I think in 5 or 6 years we're going to be talking about him as one of the huge talents. And it's great that he'll be able to learn on the job. I'm interested to see Toronto. I think Carl Robinson's going to be really fun to watch. I can't wait till they get Ronnie O'Brien back. I think that's going to make them more dynamic. They shipped out Jose Cancelo, which I think is good for Pepe, both because he's going to be able to play under Fernando Clavijo and also because I know he is unhappy to have to go to Canada after working so hard to get his green card. What do you make of that trade?
I think it's probably a good – to me, it feels like Colorado got the best of that trade. I think it's a great move for Jose. I hope he I've been a big fan of Jose for a long time, and I hope him all the luck over there in Colorado. He's got a nice brand new stadium to play in. He's got a coach that seems to understand his skills.
Fernando's wanted him for a long time.
Yeah. So the maestro is, I think he's in a good place to have a really good successful season.
Yeah, we wish Pepe all the success in the world. He's such a class act, and it just
big shout out to the maestro.
Yeah. It just wasn't quite a fit here. Anymore. Let me ask you, go back to Toronto. What do you make of Mo Johnston being Bob Gansler's boss? Like, I think it's great, smart play by Mo to bring him in, but it just seems kind of funny.
Well, it actually reminds me a little bit of when, for a basketball analogy, Avery Johnson down in Dallas?
Right.
When he was sort of like a junior coach under Don Nelson for a little while?
Right.
Is that right? Yeah, and it seems like that. He's like, I need my mentor here. It's almost like he's not really the boss of Gansler. He's more just like, I want to have a mentor here. Like Theo Epstein.
Like mentor in Shazam.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. As you know, of course, being the film buff that you are.
I'm just old. I watch it in first run.
Or when Theo Epstein brought in Sabermetrics guy, right? I mean, Theo was basically, you know, he was a sabermetrics guy because of what, is it Michael Lewis? Is that who wrote it? Something like that. Anyway, but you bring your mentor in to sort of help you out. So, I think it's a smart move by Mo. It's one of those things that proves that he can swallow his ego a little bit and say, I need some help. So, yeah, I think it's only good for a coach.
No, it's a good balancing act because he's definitely a sort of, you know, a feel guy, Mo. He's just sort of, you know, a little bit wacky, a little bit crazy, has a great feel for the game, terrific contacts. And then you've got, you know, Bob Gansler who provides the grounding and the sort of day-in, day-out structure. So it looks like a good move. What else with Toronto? You think that the Revs are obviously, you know, installed as favorites, except for the fact that they still, according to Mariner, may be missing some of the big names because of injury.
Well, I think that's the key for the Revs right now is who comes back on from the injury list. Right now it's so hard to know what Toronto really is all about, considering we don't really have, you know, we don't have much of a background to go on. So then you just look at your own team and. You know, I think the Revs, if they can get a couple of guys back, I think it's huge for the Revs that they're going to get Noonan a little healthier. They got him a little time on Saturday. I think that's massive. They really needed to have that and get him sort of back into the flow of things, get his sharpness back. He gets another week of training. Because, come on, I mean, Pat Noonan's a brilliant player. When he's on the field, he makes everyone around him better. And so that's only going to help Taylor Twellman as well. Especially, you know, you have a Noonan-Twellman partnership going up against a back line in Toronto that doesn't have much cohesion because they've never really played together. That's the kind of thing that can really pay dividends.
I agree. His sharpness appeared to be there. It's more the fitness aspect, I think, with Noonan. It's just...
Part of his game is that, though. You know, part of his game is always... He's not the kind of guy who... You know, needs to. He's not going to hold on to the ball for 10 minutes. You know, and so that sort of quick sharpness with his ball is not with the ball is not necessary. So you're right, though. I think he looked just fine, just laying the ball off. You know, maybe beat one guy and then get rid of it. Guy's such a smart player. It's fun to watch.
Yeah, he is, and he immediately creates chances for Twellman. Yeah. I love Twellman also. Taking the shot from outside of the box, the one he crashed off of the bar. I'd love to see him do more of that because he's able to, you know, take those couple of touches and, you know, because guys will stand off him a little bit and he's got.
Because they think he's going into the box.
Right.
And he did it once last year and got a goal out of it when he blasted one from outside. And I think it's great. It's a great little addition to his arsenal, which is the ability to turn the man, you know, notice that space and whack one.
Yep, and even if he doesn't, you know, score all the time, it'll keep people a lot more honest. He'll get into the box more. So
exactly.
Yeah, you know, Taylor. You could tell Taylor. He did everything but score. It was so bizarre to see him miss that header by as much as he did, just because, you know, usually he turns at least, you know, he might hit the goalkeeper, but he never puts that.
Yeah, he knows. He knows though.
Well, of course. No, and you know, and also I think, you know, until you see the angle of the cross, you know, it was a good ball, but I think he just didn't adjust to it, you know, with his feet. But hey. He's going to get more of those. He's going to bury a lot of them. And, you know, I agree with your assessment. The Revs could easily have come away with a result from that, and it just didn't work out. So, Greg, thanks for the time.
Sorry I was a little bit late.
No, it all worked out. We had the expert on before you, so that sort of worked out well with Rich Mahoney. Somebody knew what he was talking about.
All right, you get the expert in, then bring the amateur in?
That's how we do it. But, Greg, we'll be on Saturday night on TV 38, and
yes,
look forward to getting into the home schedule. Greg Wallace, live from, I was going to say Brooklyn, but you're in Boston, right?
I am in Boston this week.
Okay, good to have you back where you belong.
Thank you very much.
Okay,
we'll see you later.
We'll talk to you Saturday. All right.
I want to thank all three of my guests, Paul Mariner, Greg Lawless, and Ridge Mahoney for their time. Again, the Revolution live at the stadium. Come on down for the home opener. Call 1-877-GET-REVS if you haven't gotten your tickets already. That's about it. Tune in on 38 on the Revolution Radio Network or come to the stadium and see the doubleheader, and we'll talk to you next Tuesday at 1 on In the Net.